Hello, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Campbell. Welcome back to Day 2 of our Society article for the month of January 2017. It's great to have you here. Now, yesterday we were talking about how learning soft social skills might help kids to avoid a life of crime. And it was a really, really interesting article. But before we review what we talked about yesterday, let's welcome back our friends. Hello, Albert and Lois. How are you guys today?
Hi, Campbell. I'm great. I hope you are too.
I'm great.
It's good to be back, and I hope our listeners are well as well.
Yeah. So we had an interesting discussion yesterday about soft skills and how they can help to prevent juvenile delinquency in the future. Now, let's review a little bit. What are we talking about when we're talking about soft skills?
Well, we're talking about people's emotional interactions in a way. Mm-hmm. So how do they react to people, and how do their emotions, I don't know, do they have control of them when they're interacting with people?
Right.
So in other words, I sometimes think of, well, are you a good listener, or does somebody say something and it instantly makes you fly off the handle?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, we all face situations where people say something or people do things that offend us or hurt us, you know, but how do we deal with those negative emotions, right? And how do you respond, or how do you handle those? And are you able to put yourself, what we say, put yourself in the other person's shoes and kind of see, well, why would they say things, or why would they do that, or why would they say it in that way, you know? And a lot of times what I've found is when you're able to put yourself in that other person's shoes and you look at what they're looking at, you can understand why they may have done what they did. And that usually helps you to have a little bit of more empathy. And we're going to be talking about that today. Now, there have been studies, or there was a particular study that was done about teaching kids soft skills. In particular, kids that were at high risk for developing aggressive behavioral problems. Now, again, what are aggressive behavioral problems, Albert?
Well, as you mentioned yesterday, being aggressive is confrontational, you're not playing well with others, mm-hmm. you're provoking or starting a problem or incident.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're just going around. It's just, you know, basically overall not nice.
Right. And usually kids who do that, they kind of are feeling insecure themselves, mm-hmm. or they kind of have different problems that they're dealing with and they don't know how to handle it, and so they're taking it out on others.
Right. And if you hear a teacher or a daycare provider say, you know, your son or your daughter is a real problem in the classroom, they do have aggressive behavioral problems, you might instantly have a ding in your head saying, mm-hmm. oh, my kid is being a bully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So things like yelling and hitting and
wanting your own way, right?
Yeah, not listening to the teacher and causing disruptions. So all these can be categorized under aggressive behavioral problems. Now, there was a program called Fast Track, and Fast Track, basically, they divided a group of students, about 900 students, into two groups. Right? And half of them took part in the intervention. The other half was a control group. So comparing the two groups. And the intervention included teacher-led curriculum, parent training groups, academic tutoring, and lessons in self-control and social skills. And what were the results of this program?
Well, the results were good results, Campbell.
Mm.
It says the result was reduced delinquency. So in other words, arrests, there weren't as many or none at all. And they also had better physical health and mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there were really good results. And what we found was there's a new study that went and explored why this program was so successful in these areas. And what did they find, Albert?
Well, they found that, hey, you know, it was all due to having higher or better emotional intelligence.
That's right. So emotional intelligence was even more important than academic intelligence in terms of helping to prevent behavioral problems.
Right.
So that was really interesting. All right. Well, we heard from Kenneth Dodge yesterday, and he is a professor at Duke who is the principal investigator, which just means that he is the one that is doing the study. He's examining these results. And he suggests that parents should do all they can to promote these skills with their children, as well as education policymakers. All right. So now there are some other people who have looked into this study, and we're going to hear from them today. And there are things that they feel needed, that need to be added to, and other things that should be taught to these kids. So what are these things? Well, let's get into our article for today. We are going to be on page 31, and today is January 21st. So if you have your magazine, you can open up your magazine or join us on your mobile device, and we'll start at the top of page 31.
All you need is love. To Neil Bernstein, a psychologist in Washington, D.C., who specializes in child and adolescent behavior disorders, the researcher's findings seem consistent with what he's seen on the ground in working with children for more than 30 years. And while he says he agrees with the importance of teaching self-control and social skills, he would add empathy to the list too. Why add empathy? Empathy is what makes us aware of the feelings of others. And when you're empathic, you're much less likely to hurt someone else's feelings, says Bernstein, who serves on the advisory board for the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids and is the author of multiple books, including How to Keep Your Teenager Out of Trouble and What to Do If You Can't. Being in tune with how someone else feels might also make adolescents steer clear of bullying and other behaviors of concern, Bernstein says. While Bernstein thinks the study's findings are meaningful and could potentially serve as a model for schools, he says that collectively getting a school system, teachers, parents, and students all motivated enough to take part in an intervention like Fast Track is challenging.
All right, so we hear from a man named Neil Bernstein, and he's a psychologist who specializes in child and adolescent behavior disorders. And what does he say about these researchers' findings?
Well, he says that the researchers, with their findings, seem consistent with what he's seen on the ground, what he's seen day in and day out, in working with children for more than 30 years. And while he says he agrees with the importance of teaching self-control and social skills, he would add empathy to the list, too.
Right. So he agrees with what these findings are saying, right? He agrees that it's important that self-control and social skills are taught to these kids and that they will do a lot in terms of helping kids to prevent behavioral problems in the future. But he wants to add something else. He wants to add empathy. Now, what is empathy, Albert?
Well, empathy, we briefly touched on it yesterday, was just the ability to share someone else's feelings or experiences by imagining what it would be like to be in their situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, empathy sounds a lot like this other word that we know of, sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
And the main difference is when you have sympathy for someone else, it's you're unable to put yourself in their shoes, but you do feel sorrow or you feel sad for them.
Right.
Or pity.
Yeah.
Whereas empathy, you're like, okay, I can not only feel for you, I can relate with you.
Right. So sympathy is kind of like, I feel bad for you, but empathy is like, I feel bad because I know how you feel, right?
Right. Or I always find it comforting, actually, when somebody says to me, I haven't gone through this, and I can't imagine going through it, but I am really feeling for you right now, and I'll be praying for you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate when somebody says that, because to me, it's it truly has moved to empathy.
Right. Yeah, putting yourself in that person's shoes. And that's kind of what we were talking about a little bit earlier, right? Just putting yourself in the other person's shoes and feeling what they would feel rather than just being like, oh, okay, I feel bad for you.
Exactly. For myself, I'm someone who has raised my children, and they're in their 20s now, well into their 20s now. But I might say to Campbell, this is really tough right now, Campbell. These are tough years, but you are going to make it.
Mm.
And I'll be thinking of you and praying for you and bring the girls over for me to see, and we can have some fun and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why add empathy? What does this article say? What does Bernstein say about empathy?
Well, if we look at his quote in the section we're reading on page 31, it says, empathy is what makes us aware of the feelings of others. And when you're empathic, you're much less likely to hurt someone else's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, a lot of us have probably not heard this word, but have heard empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
So according to the dictionary I have, mm-hmm. we can use one or the other, because empathetic, and it does say, it is actually right above the word empathic. So it says involving, characterized by, or based on empathy.
Right. So when you're empathetic or when you're empathic, you're able to be aware of the feelings of others, and you're less likely to hurt someone else's feelings.
And I find that people that truly show empathy, it just comes naturally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're sitting there going, oh, I got to figure this out now. It's just a natural response for them.
Right. Basically, when you're empathetic or you're empathic, you feel what others feel. So you know what it feels like to get hurt and to hurt other people's feelings, or for your feelings to be hurt. So you're not going to want to do that to other people. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
So
adding empathy helps to make you more aware. And at the top of column two, it says, being in tune with how someone else feels might also make adolescents steer clear of bullying and other behaviors of concern. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think you now have a child that is sensitive in the good sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean they're getting upset and hurt all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It just truly does mean they might have a friend or an acquaintance and they see what they're going through, mm-hmm. or they're with them when maybe something bad happens to them. And they just know, you know what? This is this person. And this person is a person, and I want to protect this person, and I don't want to get involved in teasing or the bullying.
Right.
I want to be the person that says, hey, stop this.
Yeah.
Let's be nice.
Right. So when you're in tune with somebody or something, you understand and you agree with them, and you feel what they feel. You know what they're going through.
Right. And when we learned yesterday in this article, lots of these things do have to be trained between the ages of 6 to 11,
mm-hmm.
because that's when kids actually start, we can say, bullying or ganging up on another kid. And why we say ganging up is because it usually starts with one bully, but they usually get other people involved.
Right.
And that's where we get the term ganging up, because now a gang is attacking this child. Maybe not physically, but definitely emotionally.
Right. And so if you are aware of the fact that the words or the actions that you're saying or doing is hurting someone, you're not going to be doing that, right? Because so, if you understand that it hurts them, then you're empathetic, then you feel that pain. And you don't want to be inflicting that on someone else.
Exactly.
So you're going to steer clear of bullying. Now, Bernstein thinks the study's findings are meaningful and could potentially serve as a model for schools. He says that collectively getting a school system, teachers, parents, and students all motivated enough to take part in an intervention like Fast Track is challenging. So there's a lot of people involved. There's not just the teachers, there's also the parents, and then you also have to get the school board. And so trying to get everybody kind of working together to implement this program.
To check the box, right? Yeah. They want to go ahead.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So that's why this next section says difficult to gain traction. Now, what are we talking about when we're talking about gaining traction, Albert?
Well, usually, in a sense, when I hear someone says, oh, we have difficulty getting traction, I think physically. Like a car is spinning its wheel. It's not able to get purchase and be able to drive off.
Mm-hmm.
But here, we mean like, hey, you know, when we say it's difficult to gain traction, it means like you're not able to gain any headway or get any progress. If like Campbell's asking me like, oh, how's the project going? I'm like, oh, you know, we're having difficulty getting some traction here.
That's right. Okay, so will this program have trouble gaining traction? Well, let's find out in this last section.
Difficult to gain traction. According to Lucy Sorensen, a PhD student at Duke and lead author of the study, programs like Fast Track need buy-in from school systems, teachers, and parents. And that can be a tough sell. But she adds that it's a strength of Fast Track that the students get support both at school and at home. There's a growing and new understanding of what it takes to be successful as an adolescent and an adult, Dodge says. It used to be that all we thought it took was academic skills. Reading and math are very important for tasks that require reading and math. Self-control is important for life tasks that require self-control. That's what avoiding arrest and violent crime is all about.
So what would it take for a program like Fast Track to succeed?
Well, it says that this Fast Track, it needs to buy in from school systems. In other words, it needs to get school systems to get on board. And this means both the teachers and parents. And this can be a tough sell.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the teachers are for it and the parents are. Sometimes the parents are for it and the teachers aren't.
Right.
So it really depends on, in the initial stages to me, how's the presentation being made?
Right. So basically, everyone needs to agree because this is not just something that the teachers do, and it's not just something the parents do, and it's not just one or two classes. It's like a whole school system. So there are a lot of people involved, and they all need to buy in, which, as Lois said, just means they all need to agree that this is a good idea. They all need to want to do this.
Yeah, and you know, it's a valid question that parents have when they say, but is there enough hours in the school day to implement this and start this up because my child needs to learn this, this, and this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the challenge is also that the results aren't instantaneous. You know, I feel like with education, a lot of times what you teach, you do not see the results for decades, you know, years before. And so it's hard to really tell, okay, well, we've done this. Is it working?
You know?
And so there needs to be that commitment to stick with it for years before they even are able to see if these results are working. But she does add, so the she here is Lucy Sorensen. She's a PhD student at Duke, and she's the lead author of the study. So she's writing the results out. And she adds that it's a strength of Fast Track that the students get support both at school and at home. So while the challenge is that there are a lot of people that need to be involved, that's also the strength of the program. So that it's not just something that they're getting at school, but they're also getting help at home. And there's a growing and new understanding of what it takes to be successful as an adolescent and as an adult, Dodge says. Now, Albert, who is Dodge again?
Yeah, Dodge, he's a professor at Duke University who is the principal investigator of this program.
Mm-hmm. And what does he say about academic skills?
He says, well, you know, there was this idea that we thought it was all it took in life was academic skills. You do good in school, you'll get a good job, mm-hmm. you'll get a good family, so on and so forth, and right. you'll be set.
Right.
But now we're finding out, like, well, you know, there needs to be a balance.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, you definitely need math and science skills, right? You can't
right.
live without those skills. But at the same time, you also need self-control, right? And I know a lot of employers are looking for people they get along with, people that they enjoy being around. If you are a difficult person, you're kind of awkward, mm-hmm. you're going to have a hard time getting a job.
Exactly, right. Because so many jobs now are about teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're that kind of person, you don't really want to be part of a team.
That's right. And it says here, self-control is important for life tasks that require self-control. That's what avoiding arrest and violent crime is all about. Well, that makes sense.
Sure, right? Does.
You don't get to just go and take that iPhone from the store because you really want it.
And you can't have that free cappuccino even though you think you should just be able to walk out the door.
Right, exactly. So learning self-control, learning empathy, learning social skills, all of these are very important. And I think the idea here is you need to have a well-rounded individual, right? You cannot just have someone who is book smart. You also need someone who is what we call street smart as well.
Exactly. That's a good way of putting it, Campbell.
All right. All right. Well, we have had an interesting 2 days here. Albert, what's something that stuck out to you from this article?
Well, I feel like maybe it's just the change of times as of recent. I feel like if we go back, you know, a couple of decades, I feel like people were teaching soft skills. Maybe parents and teachers had more time with children to be able to make them more well-rounded. But nowadays, you know, we have a lot of students per teachers, and we swung in the direction of like, oh, you know, it's about going to school, getting good grades, going to college, mm-hmm. and we're pushing them hard. You know, they're studying from day to night,
right.
and they don't have time to interact and learn these socializing skills. Granted, even if they had time to, I feel like, you know, learning soft skills and developing it is a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always learning more about people. Everyone is their own story.
Right.
Everyone's very complicated.
Right.
And like you said earlier before, messy. In fact, I mean, like, things in life are just really messy. That's not necessarily bad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see that now, you know, there's research being done and we're bringing it back. We're bringing
right.
it back and saying like, hey, you know, there are other things that make up life other than just hard skills.
Yeah.
And
you know, it's really interesting because you mentioned that, you know, several years ago, there wasn't this emphasis. And I think about when I was in school, and I'm sure when you were in school, mm-hmm. this was not something that people were consciously doing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Right. Except I can remember, like, the type of school I went to, you were there from kindergarten till grade 8, okay? So we had to learn, actually, as older students in the school, be nice, be gentle
mm-hmm.
to the younger students in the school.
Right.
And there was definitely this being taught in the classroom, no, I'm Miss or Ms. or Mrs. or
right. respect.
Respect and not being, now I find a lot of students are too familiar.
Yeah.
And you haven't given them that permission.
Right.
And so I even have a few nieces or nephews, and they just think they can call me by my first name.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, no, mm-hmm. I'm Aunt Lois to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to show me respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we might need to be a little bit more diligent in that area
right.
and very upfront about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I think society has changed somewhat, you know, and I think while these things were taught in school, it wasn't so institutionalized, right?
Right.
It was just kind of like, this is who I am as a teacher, and this is what I'm going to teach you as a parent, and it wasn't so, you know, academically, it wasn't studied, you know
right.
what I'm saying? And it wasn't so, there wasn't a program. It was just done.
I think maybe in general, I think life has become too busy and fast in its of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, parents are not having enough time to spend with their children, or even if they are, your attention is kind of divided.
Right.
you know, I feel like sometimes it's something that we keep talking about on the radio, but like, you know, sometimes if you just put away the phone or whatnot mm-hmm. and make priorities, right. you can, there are times where you can teach children these things on the side.
Right.
Yeah.
And one thing I've been trying to be more aware of as a parent is teaching and disciplining out of love and not out of fear. Do you know what I'm saying? Because when I try to, if I discipline out of fear, meaning I punish, and I do punish bad behavior, but if that's all I'm doing, mm-hmm. then they're only going to behave when I'm around.
Right.
Right? But if I can, I can show them that I love them and I can, and build that relationship with them where they also love and respect me, I feel like that's more powerful because even when I'm not around, we have that relationship. So they're not going to want to do things mm-hmm. that shame me
right.
or hurt me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Great thing to practice because I grew up in an era where I really feel I was always told what I was doing badly mm-hmm. or that I was being bad
right.
instead of being praised when you needed to be praised.
Right.
I always am thankful that I had one set of grandparents that were real cheerleaders.
Right.
And so that balanced it out in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So having that sense of knowing that you are loved, but, you know, you do need to balance that with discipline. You can't just be like, oh, I love you, so, you know, do whatever you want. That's not love either.
No, that's not love either.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've had an interesting 2 days, and there is a lot that we can talk about. And we'd love to hear from you and hear some of your feedback. What did you think about this article? Write to us at letters@studioclassroom.com. As always, check out our QR code at the top of page 30 for some more fun features and for more insight. And we welcome you to come back again and join us for our next program. Thanks, friends. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.